I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Memo. It is Monday, the first day of February 2016. Brad Locke here with you, along with W. Derek Russell.
Almost Groundhog Day, one of my favorite holidays.
Great movie, too.
Fantastic movie. Unfortunately, we won't have a podcast on Groundhog Day, because otherwise I was going to suggest we just keep doing the same interview over and over again.
Yeah, we could do that.
We could.
So it's a good thing we don't have a podcast on Groundhog Day. In other words.
Well, just for that, we're going to have one tomorrow. So I can have my joke.
It's me, Ned Gunderson. Isn't that his name?
It's that first step. It's a doozy.
Oh, man.
Somewhere, I forget what channel is doing a 24-hour marathon.
What?
Which is funny, because it's just showing
exactly.
Movie.
See, I get
the joke. You get the irony.
I get the joke, yeah.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
Okay.
Although I did say this morning that a town in Canada does the same thing that Punxsutawney does, and their groundhog died last night.
I saw you tweet that. That's poor timing.
It's unfortunate.
They got an alternate ready to go? Or?
I don't know what they're
Maybe the groundhog's son gets to take over now?
Well.
How does that work?
What if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
What?
It's a quote from the movie.
Oh, that's right. It's been a while since I've seen
Andy McDowell tells Bill Murray, worry about it tomorrow. And he said, what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today.
You need to watch the 24-hour marathon, Brad.
I know. I need to freshen up on my quotes.
Etched in your mind. Such a great movie.
Yeah, it is. Man.
Did you watch Grease live last night?
No.
Okay, good.
I haven't watched Grease the movie yet, and I don't plan on it.
Yet, at a certain point, you just have to stop saying yet. I think
I have no plans to watch it.
It's older than you, so I don't
I may have said before, I don't like musicals.
It may not be older than you. I'm not entirely sure.
No, I'm older than
you. It's older than you.
I'm born in 75. Didn't it come out in the late 70s?
When was that made?
I don't
77?
Know. There's only one
Well, the musical's older than you, but the film, the actual film. 78. Yeah, you're older than the film.
Okay.
Than John Travolta and Olivia.
See, I don't know why. I just don't like musicals. There's only one musical movie that I like, and I think that's like a Stockholm Syndrome thing going on, because when we were growing up, my sister would watch Sound of Music over and over and over and over, to the point that I used to hate it, and now I'm like, I don't know why.
Now it's like Groundhog Day.
I guess. I like it. Like, you've accepted it. It's on. Hey, cool. Good movie.
Sound of Music's not bad. The only thing I hate worse than Grease has a terrible message. Don't change for anybody. That's why I don't like Grease. Yes, it has snappy music, but it has a terrible message. The only thing I hate worse than Grease is cats.
Yeah.
I want to go strangle all the cats on that stage.
Not a cat person?
No. Well, no, but I also don't like the show either.
Oh, okay. So
I'm not going to actually strangle a cat, but the people on stage prancing around like them, yes. I'll them.
You don't like to belt out Memories?
No, I hate Memories. I hate that song.
Two of my daughters went to see Wicked recently.
Wicked's good.
I like Wicked.
I'm sure I would enjoy that.
I'm a theater major. I like musicals.
Well, I mean, my thing is that theater and movies, I don't know, two different things.
Yeah, it's hard to do it in a film. Grease, obviously, somehow achieved that. But yeah, Fox did a live version last night.
How was that? I heard someone totally...
East Coast and West Coast. They had to turn around and do it all over again immediately after. I'm serious.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So I heard, did people like it? I don't know.
Apparently it was a huge get.
It's kind of a thing now.
It's a big thing.
For networks to
NBC
do that.
NBC was doing them, or is doing them now that they've kind of replaced... it's their holiday thing. They don't really show the holiday movie. They used to show It's a Wonderful Life and everything, and now they do a between Thanksgiving and Christmas, they do a big live. They just did The Wiz
previously.
So Fox is getting into it now. They've done Grease, and they're going to do Rocky Horror Picture Show in October.
Interesting.
So that seems to be a...
And bring Tim Curry back for that?
A new thing. He actually is going to be in it.
What?
I did not know he had a stroke until not too long ago.
He did.
I saw him a couple of years ago in something, and he still, it was Tim Curry. He's in a wheelchair now.
He's pushing 70.
I hate seeing him like that, but actually is going to be in it. He's going to, I don't know if you know Rocky Horror.
I actually haven't seen it, but I've heard all about it over the years.
There's a character, Dr. Scott, that's in a wheelchair, and he's actually going to be that character in it. So
interesting.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Huh,
but anyway, huge tangent.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah, just musicals aren't my thing.
Well, I thought it was interesting. The reason I said something about it is because I was reading that one of the actresses' her dad died yesterday, like hours before they were supposed to do it, and she went on and did the show.
Wow.
Wow.
And like dedicated it, her performance to him in it. But yeah, he passed like just a few hours before they went live. So,
jeez, that's tough.
That probably added a whole new realm to people that were watching it last night. I did not
want to see more live shows, but like not musicals. Because didn't ER do a live?
ER did once. I never saw it. A big get like around season 5 and 6 to start doing stuff like that. There's a show on NBC that there's a sitcom that does every episode live.
Really?
Undateable is the name of it. I've never watched it. Huh. But every episode they do, every week they do it live, and they do an East Coast and a West Coast.
Interesting.
So they do it back to back. Did not know that. 30 Rock did one time. It was excellent. Yeah, I remember ERs because there was a Cubs game on, and they were in the break room watching the Cubs game in the TV, and it was actually on. I thought that was really cool at the time. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's cool.
That was like 20 years ago.
So. Yeah, it was. Wow. That was a long time ago. I'm old.
It was. We do this live.
Sure.
We record it live.
It just comes later for you. But
yeah.
Don't take away the mystique.
It's live-ish.
It just ruined it.
How many podcasts were done live, though?
A lot.
Really?
Yeah.
I have no idea. Yeah. Okay. Maybe we should do a live podcast. We've done it before.
I'm going to guess that's probably not the best idea.
Oh, come on. It'd be great.
We need to do a Periscope the whole thing.
Not with your language. We have to be on that 7-second button every delay, just in case. You're worse than Ricky Gervais at the Golden Globes.
Oh, man.
We got a big show today.
Yeah, we do.
Lots of, not new guests, but changing up the format a little bit. Some people that aren't on regularly.
Yeah.
Paris
Alford, Thomas Wells.
Those are the ones.
Paris Wells, Thomas Alford.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Thank you for that. All right, let's get started.
Hey, let's talk some football. Ole Miss football. Paris Alford, Ole Miss beat reporter for the Journal, is here with us. Hello, Paris.
Brad, how are you, man?
Good. How
are
you?
You used to be in sports. I remember you.
Yeah, we used to do radio stuff together all the time.
That's right.
It's been a while.
Here we are again.
I know.
Full circle.
Old times. Good times. Okay. Hey, last week we had this report, Pat Forty of Yahoo Sports first reported it, about all these violations, this NCAA letter of allegations about potential violations by Ole Miss football, track and field, women's hoops, I think. And, you know, when that first comes out, it kind of is, people are like, uh-oh, now what? You know, because you had the whole Laramie Tunsil thing this past season. But now that we know the details, and Ross Bjork has spoken a little bit about it, and now we know what it's about, it's not as big a deal as maybe people thought.
You know, that's the feeling from the program over there, Brad, and the people that I've talked to inside and outside the program is that it's not that big a deal. The women's basketball portion of this has been dealt with. This has been a long investigation from the NCAA. The Tunsil thing in the fall was a separate investigation.
Yeah.
From what I understand, that's part of this letter, but it's almost like that's just been added on. Like, oh, and by the way, this happened too. Even though that's been dealt with and Tunsil was reinstated and made a huge difference for them in the last 6 games.
Yeah.
But, you know, the feeling in the program is that the football part of this, and that's what everyone's looking at right now, is minor, deals with Houston Nutt's staff and a former assistant coach, David Saunders, and deals with violations from maybe 2010 or earlier, so long time ago, from coaches who were not a part of this staff, players that are long gone. But you know, you can say it's minor and believe it's minor, but, you know, my grandmother used to say minor surgery is surgery that happens to someone else. So as long as there's an NCAA investigation going on, you know, you need to be aware and look and watch, and you just don't know what they're going to come back with. But the feeling is that penalties that will come from this will be minor.
Yeah, and of course, David Saunders, you mentioned him. He was on Mark Hudspeth's staff at Louisiana Lafayette, and he got dinged there by the NCAA and now has that show cause and everything.
Yeah, 8 years, and has been welcomed at Pearl River Community College, where he's head coach there. And, you know, nothing like a good Mississippi JUCO scandal. You know, that's
Mississippi
a
JUCOs, they'll hire anybody.
But, you know, a lot of people, a lot of comments I've heard, Brad, have been, people have been concerned about the timing of Pat Forde's report, the timing of the letter being received, the fact that, well, the report came out on the Friday that that Ole Miss was hosting the last big weekend of official visits before signing day this Wednesday, and, of course, now signing day coming up. I don't think there's a big conspiracy here on the timing aspect of it. You know,
there's always a conspiracy, Parrish. Come on.
Come on, man. Look, Ole Miss was closely tied to the Louisiana Lafayette investigation. Yeah. And just to be clear, there is a hyphen there because there is no official University of Louisiana without a hyphen. Okay. So there is a hyphen. So ULL being investigated.
Says the UL Monroe grad.
Yeah, that's right. Ole Miss was closely tied to that because of Saunders obviously coaching in Lafayette, having coached three different times at Ole Miss, most recently as an administrative assistant for Houston Nutt's staff. Okay, and that's what this goes back to. It makes sense that when they finish with the Lafayette investigation, they would go straight to Ole Miss and finish with Ole Miss. I mean, I understand the timing of that. And the NCAA has no regard for signing day. They don't care.
Yeah.
This is investigative staff. You know, they're jumping to Ole Miss, which was a part of the Lafayette investigation, now that they're finished in Lafayette. I mean, that's the way I see the timing of it.
Okay. You know, you talk about Pat Forde of Yahoo Sports has been doing this for a long time. And I'm sure there's some people that think maybe he's got it in for Ole Miss with the timing. I don't know if that's the case. I seriously doubt it. But there may be a larger question as far as, you know, these stories about the violations. I mean, you have to report them, and it's necessary. But it's almost like, you know, when that first story came out, he didn't have any details. And it kind of made it sound like, this could be a huge deal. And, you know, these stories are important to do. You look at Charles Robinson and what he did with the Miami story a few years ago. That's, you know, it's good, really good investigative reporting. This, it's almost clickbaity in a way.
Well, I think the stories are important to do. But the last couple of stories that Pat Forde has written, and I don't know Pat Forde.
Yeah.
But they just seem to lack a little bit of tone, a little bit of big picture, because, again, you know, as I read through Friday's story, it was Ole Miss has received a letter, and it was almost like it was brand new, like it was not expected. And,
right.
And to a lot of people reading that, it was not expected.
Right.
You know, and it made the rounds on social media pretty quickly. And, you know, I had my Denham Springs, Louisiana friends who are big LSU fans sending me all these copies of, look at this, look at this. I'm thinking, look, you know, over here, you know, you knew this was coming. And I would imagine that to some degree Ole Miss welcomes it regardless of timing because they want to get this put to bed.
Sure.
I've seen reports that that Ole Miss has already begun somewhat of a self-sanction process, I mean, limiting some official visits, some things like that, some things that they can point to at the end and say, look what we've done. And, you know, lots of times the NCAA accepts those self-imposed sanctions.
Yeah. And something worth noting in Pat's story, he went on, most of it was just background. And part of that background was
and process and procedure.
Sure.
School has 90 days to respond.
Right.
You know, a lot of
but
background.
Also, he talked about the 2013 signing class and people's suspicions about that. And that kind of, you talked about tone, that made it sound like maybe, it's related to that, which turns out it's not.
Well, it's not.
It seems like there's still a lot of people have trouble accepting that Ole Miss could have drawn in that kind of class, and they got that kind of class coming in again, it looks like.
Well, they do. You know, I saw an interesting, gosh, I wish I could remember where I read it, but a column recently, I believe it's from gridironnow.com, which, you know, has a lot of nice content, and a writer was saying, look, you know, Clemson's recruiting at a level that it hasn't recruited before. And, you know, you don't see this same level of my gosh, Clemson must be cheating because they're suddenly energized in their recruiting and getting some big-name prospects over there on what Louis Grizzard once described as Auburn with a lake.
Oh, Louis Grizzard, I miss that guy.
I do too.
Man. Good reference, Parrish.
The Wayback Machine.
Yeah, exactly. He's a big Georgia fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He famously wrote that column after they lost to Georgia Tech. It was one sentence. He said, I don't want to talk about it. And the rest was white space. Yeah. Anyway, all right, Parrish, we appreciate you coming on. Y'all can follow him on Twitter, at Parrish Alford. Good to talk to you, man.
Good to talk to you, Brad.
Oh, by the way, y'all can listen to Parrish and to Logan Lowry, our MACB writer, on the weekly podcast Double Coverage. You can listen on iTunes, podcast app, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. What are you going to talk about this week, Parrish?
You know, I would imagine we'll talk about a little recruiting.
I think so.
By then, Hayes in the barn, man, we'll look back and we'll see who has actually signed where. We'll see if there was the big signing day surprise at either school. Yeah. Lots of times you get those things to come on. You get those surprises. But, you know, we have fun every Thursday on Double Coverage, and it's proof that Ole Miss people and MSU people can get along.
There you go.
You know, that's how the beat writers are branded. So, hey, you know, come listen to us, get along, and we'll have fun.
Yeah, signing day is Wednesday, so it's going to be a big day. So, good stuff. Check them out on Double Coverage. Let's go down to Jackson and welcome in our Capitol Bureau reporter, Bobby Harrison. How you doing today, Bobby?
All right, Brad, how you doing?
Doing well, sir. We're going to talk about a story you did on Sunday about superintendents. It's kind of interesting in Mississippi that some superintendents are appointed, some are elected. In fact, out of the state's 144 school districts, 55 are led by elected superintendents, 85 by appointed superintendents, and you have four that are under the purview of the State Board of Education because they're, I guess, problematic districts having issues. But
they've been taken over by the state. That's right.
Right. An issue this legislative session could be having all the superintendents appointed. This is not really a Republican-Democrat issue, though, is it, Bobby? It's more of a rural versus urban kind of thing.
That's right, Brad, and it's been going on for years. Various groups, the Mississippi Economic Council and other groups have come out in favor of making all school superintendents appointed. And, you know, it's always been the folks who serve school districts with elected superintendents don't, you know, they say, well, you know, we don't want to take that vote away from our people. And then, you know, in most cases, those school districts are rural districts, but over the past, I don't know, couple of decades. I mean, this has really been going on. This issue has been going on for decades. In recent years, some of those districts have become big suburban districts as well. Like DeSoto County, you know, was at one point a rural district. Now it's the biggest school district in the state. And you know, in the past, the legislators in DeSoto County were not wild about changing to an appointed superintendent. But you know, now they have a lot of new legislators in DeSoto County, and the Republican majorities are in both the House and Senate are really pushing this issue to and the governor has as well to finally this year make all superintendents appointed. And the feeling is that it's going to happen this year, but you still got, you know, you got legislators up in Northeast Mississippi who serve up Republican legislators who serve up serve in districts where there's an elected superintendent, and they're not making. Most of those guys are committing right now, but the feeling is that this year we'll finally have a case where all superintendents over a period of years are appointed. Now, what it appears is going to happen is the school district, the superintendents who were elected this past November is when the election, you know, they just recently have been reelected or have been elected for the first time. And all those superintendents will be just kind of morphed into an appointed position. And over, you know, and just sort of go from there. But, you know, it's not a done deal yet, though. I want to stress that there's still a lot of legislators from rural areas who serve in counties where the superintendent is elected, and it's going to be a tough vote for them.
What's the supposed advantage of having all the districts to have appointed superintendents?
Well, it just is a larger talent pool to elect the superintendent from, especially in the smaller districts, Brad. You know, I don't have the criteria right here in front of me, but you know, there are certain criteria you got to have. Got to have advanced academic degrees, and you have to have so many years of experience to be to serve as a superintendent in Mississippi under state law. And then a lot of the smaller school districts, in particular, they just, you know, maybe might be two or three people or in the whole district who have all those criteria, the academic degrees and the experience. So you just don't have a large talent pool to select from. As the governor said, and he's kind of putting it in terms of a lot of Mississippians can relate to, the governor in his State of the State speech, I believe, referred to, you know, the University of Mississippi selecting its football coach from just Oxford. So, you know, it was a much Roger Searle before they brought in Hugh Freeze, and you know, same at Mississippi State when they brought in Dan Mullen. So, so you know, you argue the superintendent is the most important person in the school district. So you want to, you know, to find a person with the most talent, and whether that person is local or you know, three counties over, even you know, like you know, years ago, Tupelo went out of state all the way to North Carolina. To you know, Tupelo School Board, you know, it's an appointed superintendent in Tupelo, and they went all the way to North Carolina to find their superintendent, Richard Thompson, who most people felt did a, you know, a real good job and later became state superintendent of education in Mississippi. So so that's the argument, that it's a much larger talent pool you can search for with an appointed position.
Hey, Bobby, this is Chris. Just building on that, that's because, tell me if this is right, if you are an elected superintendent, because of the election laws, you'd have to be a resident of that county. Is that right?
That's right. That's exactly right. You have to, you got to be a resident of the school district, I think.
Okay.
And you know, in Lee County, and you know, it's a larger school district, and through the years, there's been an array of people who ran for that position, and with the experience and the criteria, and you can make the case that, you know, all those people have been very capable for the job, but you know, the argument in some counties is that you can't find people like that because it's not a big enough county.
You know, to give it a little larger context, elected superintendents is not a very common thing around the country. About one third of the nation's elected superintendents serve in Mississippi schools, so it's like. Obviously, this has been going on for years. I don't know how it was in other states, if it was like this in the past, and then they all moved over to just having appointed superintendents. But, I mean, it's pretty much just a Mississippi thing, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, I think they're concentrated in the South, and most of the elected superintendents, and then, you know, they're concentrated further into Mississippi. We have, you know, and Governor Bryan and others made the argument, if we had a good school system, then – overall state school system, then you can make the argument that elected superintendents working, but you know, our school system, our state school system through the years has been, you know, as far as student achievement, one of the worst in the nation, and they say it, that proves that the system's not working. Now the people who are on the flip side, to be fair, the people on the side who's, you know, who don't want to change to make all superintendents appointed, they point out that there's not a lot of difference, if any difference, between the student achievement in the school district where the superintendent appointed compared to school district where the superintendent is elected. The student's achievement is about the same regardless of how the superintendent gets his job.
Y'all can read the story in Sunday's Journal at djournal.com. Bobby, always good to have you on. Thank you.
All right. Thank y'all.
Hey, just a reminder, this afternoon we'll have more from Bobby Harrison, the weekly webcast we do and that we're going to be doing throughout this legislative session. We'll have it live at djournal.com. We'll have Bobby on to talk about a lot of stuff that's going on down there in the Capitol, so be sure to check that out, probably in the 2 o'clock hour. But somewhere in there, as soon as we can get everybody together and get going. So look for that. And if you miss it, you can watch the replay. We'll have it there at djournal.com.
And every Monday, it'll be there, you know, roughly 2 o'clock, too.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Time for today's news memo. And for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Tupelo officials have applied for a grant that could make the city more pedestrian-friendly. The city proposes the construction of paved, handicapped-accessible pedestrian crossings at 4 railroad intersections. That would allow the city to link stretches of sidewalk that already exist. Tupelo Mayor Jason Shelton has identified accessibility to foot traffic as an ongoing focus of his tenure. The city now seeks grant funds through the Transportation Alternatives Program of the Mississippi Department of Transportation.
Mississippi House Speaker Philip Gunn has reduced the number of Democratic committee chairs from 9 to 2. Gunn said he wants conservatives leading the House for the new 4-year term. He announced chairs and members of about 40 House committees on Friday.
5 points will make a big difference in the lives of Mississippians trying to earn a GED. The GED required passing score has been lowered from 150 to 145. Itawamba Community College Adult Education Director Julia Houston said the change may seem small, but it'll make a big difference in the number of people who earn a GED. The lowered passing score strikes a balance with the more difficult version of the test introduced in January of 2014.
Even with an increase in Northeast Mississippi's unemployment rate in December, the overall jobless rate for the region in 2015 was 6.5%. That's the lowest rate in the 10 years the Daily Journal has compiled the figures for the 16-county area. December's unemployment rate jumped to 6.8%. In November, the rate was 5.5%. Northeast Mississippi has had 30 consecutive months of jobless rates under 10%, and much of the improvement can be contributed to the furniture industry. Last year, more than 1,600 furniture-related jobs were created or announced.
The Lee County School District named its Teacher of the Year and its Administrator of the Year last week. Saltillo High School math teacher Jenny Simmons was named the Teacher of the Year. Administrator honors went to Saltillo Primary Principal Ken Smith. Each of them will represent the district in the contest for state honors.
Of course, these briefs you can always read online in their full story form at djournal.com, which is brought to you by Thrive Marketing, a full-service digital marketing company located in Tupelo, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email, and text messaging services for local businesses. All right, we're joined now by Daily Journal photographer Thomas Wells. Thomas, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are y'all this morning?
Doing fine. You went on an eerie little trip here to New Albany recently. Tell us about your In Focus for this week.
Eerie trips and myself go hand in hand.
I imagine so.
That's, you know. Yeah, actually, I stumbled across that one a couple weeks ago. Very funny. Jen and I did a cook of the week, and when I was leaving, I saw this location across the street from the house, and when Jenna came back, she says, "Hey, Thomas, you see that building across the street?" I said, "Yeah, I was going to go back up there and look at that and shoot it just for myself." And she said, "Well, I talked to the cook, and she said it was the former New Albany Country Club." And I was like, when was the last time I remember a country club?
New Albany having one.
Yeah. Or New Albany having one or two, a country club closing. So I found that, you know, somewhat interesting. So I made my way up there about a week later. Actually, I think it was like Tuesday or Wednesday of last week, and went up and photographed it just for fun. And shockingly, I found, you know, of course, the building's in really bad repair, but the swimming pool still had water in it.
I don't think that you could be repaired at that point.
No, I think that's a complete bulldozer job.
You said there were fish in the swimming pool.
I was like, holy smokes. And it was crystal clear green water. It's like you're in Bermuda, but you weren't.
Wow.
It was kind of eerie. But yeah.
So I love things like this. I love seeing like old amusement parks that have been shut down for 50 years and sitting there. I don't know. I'm just weird like that.
But the disrepair.
Those pictures always just fascinate me. So I was really happy to see this yesterday. Being laid out, and I know it's decaying and rotting, but it's also kind of pristine at the same time. Everything, I mean, the diving board, the lifeguard post, the stonework outside you were talking about in your
It's amazing how the different things deteriorate at different rates of speed.
Yeah.
I mean, the diving board was rusting, and you know, but it was still in pretty good shape. The Tishomingo limestone was in pristine shape. It wasn't cracking or anything, but the roof was falling in.
Yeah.
And of course, the inside was pretty much a wreck.
Yeah.
But it was really, you know, and I went walking out what I thought was the golf course, looking for a golf course, because I researched it and I found out they had bent grass greens, which is highly unusual for this part of the country because of the heat. Only a few courses in the state have them because you've got the maintenance on them. It's just incredible.
Right.
Of course, you know, all that's gone because the grass is now waist high and it's just taken over with just the wild grass. And you couldn't even tell there was a golf course there anymore.
Wow.
Because it's only been closed for like 2 years, two or 2.5 years.
That's it?
The last time they had a tournament there was 2012, according
to the
internet.
This thing looks like it's been gone for 17 years.
It looks like it's been gone forever. But yeah, the last time they had a tournament there in 2012 on a weekend for a fundraiser.
So did you find out any story of why it closed or who has it now or anything?
Caldwell Banker has it listed, but I haven't heard from them. I had a call into them to try to find out some information, but they didn't get back to me in time.
Wow.
But it's really interesting. I was just stunned. Because when I walked into the clubhouse, there's a photo that we didn't use. Hopefully we used it online. I haven't checked today. I've been doing my time card because, you know, I've got to get paid.
I'll get them all online.
Okay, cool. There's a photo of a bird nest sitting on the top of one of the fan
blades. I saw the fans in the background and read that in your text and wondered about that.
And there's old putter head covers from, like, ping and stuff laying on the floor. Where, you know, it's eerily creepy that, it, you know, they used to be a bustle of activity and now it's just nothing.
Well, and it's just amazing to me, like you said, 2 years. I mean, it seems like this would almost have to be vandalized to get to this point in 2 years. But, I mean, there's no sign of that.
Well, you know, it looks like when I went in, there's a couple garbage cans where somebody looks like several years ago, somebody had tried to, was going to renovate it.
Yeah.
Because they had garbage cans full. They had knocked the tile down.
This.
And then said, screw it, I'm done. This is, one, my pockets aren't deep enough. And two, this just really isn't worth it.
It's been 10 minutes in there. Exactly. Like, never mind.
There's another one like that I want to go shoot, and that's the old Okolona College.
Yeah.
That main building down there is phenomenal because it's actually because the concrete in there, the ceilings have the old stalactites hanging from the ceilings where the waters come through, which is kind of cool.
Where is this in New Albany?
That is, if you're going out Highway 30 west towards Oxford, as soon as you pass the Walmart distribution facility on your left, you go to the top of the hill, take the first county road on your right. I think I forgot, it's like County Road 94 or something, and it's on County Road 65. It's literally 5 miles outside of New Albany.
And I assume it's a huge lot of land for sale.
It was,
I mean,
18,
the golf course,
it was
18
holes. Yeah, yeah, so I mean, I figure several hundred acres of land. I mean, it was just,
it
was phenomenal.
The, you know, the course was 6,400 yards long.
And I didn't know there was a pool there until when I got back from the cook and Jenna told me what it was, and I Google Earthed it, and I saw the swimming pool there, and you could see where the golf sheds were, but I couldn't get to them because of all the overgrown grass and trees
everything.
And stuff.
And fish in the swimming pool.
Fish in the swimming pool, little bitty bluegill. I mean, it was just like, how did they get in there? I mean, I'm sure nobody's came up and just like dropped a bag of goldfish off in there or something. But yeah, I saw fish, and it was really kind of makes you wonder how they.
That's crazy.
Probably a bird or something, like a blue herring or something. Walking around.
Good work, Thomas. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank y'all. Have a good week.
You too. All right. We move on from Thomas breaking and entering and trespassing to talking about crime reports. Brad, it's Monday.
Oh, yeah, it is Monday.
I need a pick-me-up.
I've got lots of pick-me-ups.
Tell me about
for
those
you.
Who have done wrong.
Oh, we've got lots of stuff today. Offense number one. An officer running stationary radar on Beets Springs Road clocked a black Chevy SUV doing 58 and a 35 around 2 p.m.
That's reckless driving, 30 miles over.
Yeah, well, yeah, 23. It's a lot.
What did I do?
58 and a 35. You said 30 over.
I thought you said 25.
No, sorry, okay. 35. He stepped out in the roadway, the officer did, and signaled for the vehicle to stop. The driver slowed as if to stop, but rolled past the officer, hitting his left hand with the side view mirror.
That's unfortunate.
The officer ran after the vehicle.
No, don't get in the car.
And cited the female driver. I guess that means he caught her. She must have stopped.
Yeah.
Cited her for speeding and
wrote a citation. Cited.
And disregard of a traffic device. So I guess that maybe they were confused.
Oh, you're not pulling me over? Okay, bye.
Oh, wait, you're not in your car. I'm supposed to.
Are you literally chasing me right now?
Too many things to process.
You didn't have lights on. I thought you were just going for a jog.
that's just bad news.
How
to,
did I know
you're strike an officer with your vehicle?
Don't do that. Don't.
I'm sure it was accidental, but still.
Don't do that. I got a friend that drove off one time while the cop was still standing there and ran over his foot.
Oh, jeez.
Like, they were done, and he'd given the ticket, and the guy went, it was a total accident, but he rolled up the window and took off. The cop was still standing there writing his notes, and his foot was under the wheel, and right over it.
Did he get another ticket?
Oh, he got another ticket, yeah. He didn't run after him, but he
probably not.
He knew to stop after it had happened. He knew that it had happened. He felt something, you know, the bump, and then looked back, and of course the cop's on the ground, and was like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's not good.
Totally wasn't me, by the way.
a friend. I noticed those air quotes.
Friend. I got away, didn't I?
Oh, boy. Here's a good one. A South Feimster Lake Road man said he received a call from someone saying they were with the Mississippi Sheriff's Office.
Oh, yes, at the state level, of course.
Not a real thing. The person on the line would not identify himself, but said the man owed $500, and if he refused to pay, they would have him arrested.
Well, I love those. For what? What do I owe $500
for? Who knows? Right. When an officer called the number and tried to ask questions, the person hung up on him. Yeah, the Mississippi Sheriff's Office, yeah. That's a real thing.
I don't answer phone calls anymore. They're almost 95% scams.
And I've gotten to the point where, I mean, I don't really get scam calls, but I get like someone the other day trying to sell me a new warranty on my car. He got about three words into it, and I just hung up on him. I've gotten to the point now, like, maybe because I'm 40, I'm just rude on the phone like that. If it's somebody that I don't want to talk to like that, trying to pitch me something, I'm not going to. I used to just like try to be polite and let them get their spiel out and then try to politely get off the phone. I just hang up now.
This is why I've stopped paying bills. I don't know who to trust. If my lights go off, I'll go pay the bill. But other than that, I don't really know who to trust anymore.
You're one of those anti-government people?
Yes.
Now? Okay.
I'm anti-male, too.
It's fun to call them out, too. Like, I got one of those one time that said I had a virus on my computer, and I said, well, which computer are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And as it went on, I just said, look, I know this is a scam. I just talked to our IT guy, and they just hung up on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't got any scam calls yet. I kind of want to, just to mess with them.
It happens.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, because there's that IRS scam going around again.
I get a call from Jamaica about once a week. Literally, it's always telling me I've won some home security system.
Oh, you've won it?
Yeah, from Ooh. Jamaica.
Jamaica, because...
I don't know if I have to go get it or what.
They're going to fly over here and install it for you? How's that work?
Did you ever watch Flight of the Conchords on HBO?
No.
Fantastic show, but they had a whole episode about internet scams. And they got the email from the Nigerian prince wanting the money. Turns out it was real. The guy's like, help me, please.
That's nice. Finally... A County Road 811 Saltillo woman said a man pulled up to her house in a car playing loud music. He got out and drilled a hole in her kitchen window. It's an odd thing to do. He said he would return that night to drill a hole in her bedroom window and then left. Here's the kicker. The deputy found no damage to any of the windows at her house.
She's been dead for 4 years.
I see dead people.
She was outside. I'm just trying to picture this.
I think she was inside.
She was inside.
Man pulled up to her house.
A man pulled up to her house playing loud music.
He got out, and for some reason, I guess with the power drill, drilled a hole in your kitchen. How do you do that without breaking the window?
Cracking the entire window. Drilled a hole.
You gotta have special tools for that, don't you?
In her kitchen window. Yeah, like Catwoman.
Or something.
Tools, like Batman tools.
Yeah.
Drilled a hole in the kitchen window.
And then was going to come back later.
That'll show you. And guess what? I'm coming back later tonight to do it again.
In your bedroom window, because... I don't know why.
So to make sure you can hear the music better?
That's all I can come up with.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, drilling a hole through a window, it would shatter.
That's what we're just saying. Yeah, I don't understand.
Know if there's any kind
So I don't know what's going on with this
but
person.
But then the cops came.
So this person might not even be real. In which case, now it's kind of sad. So, but it's weird. Yeah, the cop came out and couldn't find any damage to any windows. Maybe it's a really small hole. He couldn't find it.
No one even lives in the house.
Yeah. So that's it for crime reports today. You can find more at tipsheet.djournal.com.
All right. That's going to do it for another Monday episode of The Memo. We'll be back again on Wednesday with all new stories to cover.
Yeah.
Maybe Brad, maybe me. You never know.
Maybe both.
It's a grab bag.
Maybe nobody.
It's a Brad bag.
I don't know. You don't want a Brad bag.
Brad's on Twitter. Brad bag's on Twitter at
Bradlock.
At Bradlock. Please change your handle to... Keep the handle Bradlock, but you know, you change your name so often.
My display name?
Brad's bag. Brad bag.
Right now it's Old Man Lock. I need to come up with something else.
That sounds pretty accurate, though.
Did that after I turned 40.
Don't you drive in my driveway playing loud music and drilling my windows. I'll call the cops and show them where, oh my goodness, there's no holes in the windows anymore.
When I was a boy, we didn't have windows.
We didn't have drills or loud music.
You said.
Or vehicles.
We just had holes in the wall.
We just had holes, and we liked it.
We just did the a cappella.
Yeah. But Brad is on Twitter, at Bradlock. I'm on Twitter, at W. Derek Russell. Kiefer's on Twitter, at Chris Kiefer. Two Fs.
One R.
One K.
Two E's.
One I.
There we go.
Got it.
There's a C.
That's just the Kiefer part, though. That's Chris is also Chris one. Is, so actually, there's two I's if you can count Chris.
Chris is actually not spelled phonetically, though. It's YLQ7 Kiefer at yahoo.com. And, of course, we're on Twitter at DJournalMemo and online, memo.djournal.com. You can email us memo@journalinc.com. Also not phonetically. Well, I guess it is technically, but
nah.
Gets the hard K.
Yeah, the C.
Why are you laughing at me?
I don't know. You're just kind of talking yourself into a corner there.
I have. I'm right in this corner. Help. Help.
Okay. So, good show. We'll be back on...
Finished. We already did that part.
Okay. We'll be back on Wednesday and Thursday.
We did that part, too.
Okay. Well, guess what?
Uh-huh.
We're done. For real. Y'all have a great Monday.
DJournal.com.
Bye.
Bye.